Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hi, folks. I'm Jack Kennedy, and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. Once again, the weather continues very dry, and more animals are out in the fields all around the country. Shout out to our supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro, ESB Networks, and Bank of Ireland for helping to make this show happen. As normal, to start, the quickfire questions for Adam, Darren, and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 0868366465. Adam, here's one for you from Shane in Meath. Doing a great job, lads. He said, in fairness, he didn't say Jack, did he? He said, lads, no, okay. I have a spring calving suckler herd, Adam. March, April calving, keeping on replacements, but trying to pull back to January, February calving. Limousine, Charlie, and Simmental type cows, 700 to 900 kilos. What weight and age will heifers come in heat at, and should I do my own heifers, or would they be too young to bull and calve? What replacement value on the ICBF would you not go below? So, long question, Adam. But so, look, this is a suckler farmer looking to shift his calving date a little bit earlier. He's asking, could he use his own heifers to kind of to pull it earlier? We'll say, and will they come in heat young enough, or will they be too young to bull? Because they're now March, April calving, I presume, is what I'm taking from that question.
Yeah, I suppose it all depends, Jack, on what sort of a dew they've got, I suppose, over the winter time. If they've got a good dew and we'll say average out maybe at a kilo or 1.1 kilos, your 1st of April heifer should be coming in at 440 kilos as of this week. So I have no, you know, bones about breeding that sort of a heifer. Now, 700 to 900 kilos, probably it's a fairly big range, but we say 60% of mature weight to be at, but still, if I had them heifers at 420 or 430 kilos, I'd have no hesitation with breeding them and pulling them back. They should be cycling at that stage, no issue at all.
Nice one. And the second part of his question is, what replacement value on the ice? So I presume if he was going out buying, or maybe it's his own, he's selected between them, but he says, what replacement value on the ICBF index would you not go below?
Actually, look, you want to be improving all the time. I think, off the top of my head, I think the top, we'll say 80% threshold is 110 or 115, somewhere around 110 or 115 euros. So I wouldn't, I'd be aiming for that top 20% all the time. So I wouldn't go below that 110 or 115. I'd keep above that for replacements coming in.
Okay, nice one. Thanks, Adam. Back to you in a minute. Darren, quick one for you. How well are lambs covered with Heptivac P if born 5 to 7 weeks after the ewe was vaccinated? If not covered, how soon should I vaccinate the lamb?
Yeah, Jack, good question. And I suppose it depends on the strain of disease. For Pasteurella, they probably haven't covered for too long at all. And if you have a problem with Pasteurella pneumoniae on the farm, you should be coming in sooner. Generally, for the other strains, you're looking at they should be well covered for about 7 to 8 weeks. some of the strains of Clostridia will be up to 10 or 11 weeks. But the caveat to that, Jack, is that if you have a very high risk or a very high load or challenge on your farm, well, then you might want to be coming in at 4, 5, 6 weeks of age. And that decision generally comes from having a few postmortems done and seeing that you have a problem and talking with your vet. But generally, you should be okay for in 8 to 10 weeks of age.
Okay. So are you, the first part of that question was 5 to 7 weeks after the vaccinated, you're okay, they are okay. And, but, you know, depending on what strain you have on the farm, you might be coming in sooner rather than later. And you're saying which one did you say if is an issue on the farm, if Pasturella?
If you had Pasturella pneumonia, which isn't, say, one of the Clostridial, but if you had a problem with that, you would be coming in. But look at it, it'd typically be later on the year, maybe store Lance Hoggets, that would sort of manifest itself. But pulpy kidney is generally the one that gets, say, the fastest growing lamb. You go out and you find it dead in the field. There's all Black Sea, Black Leg, them, they're the typical ones. And if you have issues with those on the farm, I know farmers that come in and they vaccinate even at the, say, maybe 6, 7 weeks of age when they're given maybe an imahadiris dose. They just have it as a safeguard at that stage.
Yeah, perfect. Excellent. Thanks, Darren. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, quick fire for you. Ask Aidan, with the increasing costs of forage, as in silage, have forage crops a role, for example, kale?
Yeah, Jack, sure they do, you know, they do in some situations. Like, I would say you're probably better off, think back to 2018 during the drought, you know, when silage was going to be scarce. We're probably facing into something similar this year where silage could potentially be scarce. Forage crops work really well on tillage farms. So the livestock farmer wasn't growing it on his or her land. He was, you know, they were being grown on the tillage farm, and it was extra feed coming into the system. The issue is if you put them onto grass field, you're reducing the amount of grass. Obviously, that grass is going to grow. It's out of production. It's also out of production for until next spring, because you're going to, you know, it's until beyond next spring, next June or July, really, because you're going to sow it in April, and sure, it won't be up until June or July. So kale, and that the issue with kale is that it needs to be sown early, so that's 1st of June-ish. The hybrid rape, the rape kale hybrid, like such as Red Start or Gorilla or something like that, they can be sown in August, and they'll yield about 4 or 5 ton or 6 ton, even if it's a really good crop, up to the middle of November. They work best if they're grazed, you know, not for they don't work as well if you're cutting them or baling them or zero grazing them.
Okay, we might come back.
But zero grazing isn't too bad, but bale is a no-no. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's fine. We might come back to it later on. We'll talk about those costs that have increased a good bit. Adam, talk to me on, first of all, to come to you in terms of the main show. Talk to me on the mark trade. I mean, there was some chat, I suppose, that planar type stock had taken a kind of a dive back. Is that the case? Is that right?
Yeah, so we went into Marpid's data this week, Jack, I suppose, for the paper, and we're looking at, I guess, in terms of that specific grass type animal or grass type, we'll say bullock or heifer. Look, we have a great strength in that Marpid's database with thousands of actual sales data coming in from marts around the country every week, and we update that database every week. So we've access, we can see trends and we can see where things are going. And look, when I dived into it this week, we're not seeing what's been talked about there in terms of a big reduction in prices of stock. Like if I look at the Marpid's database for this week, 400 to 500 kilo grass bullocks, the averages are trading at 246. That's up from 241 a kilo in February, up from 226 a kilo in January. It's a similar story for grass heifers. You know, averages again 252 for March, for the full month of March there, 249 for February, 235 for January. And look at weanlands are the same, Jack. Maybe weanlands might have sort of leveled off, but definitely haven't reduced. And really, we've seen the last few days a big change. Over the weekend, you have sunshine, especially in the northwest. That's hitting a thing like grass fever then, in terms of people going into marts and seeing grass growing and seeing sunshine and seeing blue skies. Every year we see this first week of April, we see that cattle trade lift, and we're seeing that already. And if I look back as well in terms of Marpid's, looking back at the 2021 database versus the 2022 database, we're seeing for the month of March, store prices up probably 25-30 cents there for months, we'll say year on year, versus March 22 versus March 21. So no, it's pretty positive. I suppose, look at factory agents were rubbing their hands last week, Jack, when that news came out, or that talk came out about store trade coming down, because they're filling up sheds at the moment with stores, and even at north of 450 kilos, they're snapping it up at the minute. So look, a bit of hearsay, a bit of idle chat. When you look at the data and you look at the hard data, it's not happening.
Okay, now, yeah, and you, but there is probably some kind of sense to it, Adam, in that you could expect, like, I mean, with fertilizer prices where they are, with silage prices going to be where they are this year, given diesel prices and the whole shooting dandy, I mean, feed is going to become a lot more expensive. And our survey showed, or talked about, that listen, farmers were thinking of reducing stocking rate, you know what I mean? So potentially, you know, they mightn't hold as much stock this year, depending on what way things play out.
Yeah, but potentially, but we're not, over the last couple of days, definitely that good weather has put a little bit of confidence in again. Talking to managers, they're saying, I suppose the initial shock of that fertilizer price has maybe abated a little bit, and farmers are looking to stock up ground again, similar to last spring.
Okay. Talk to me, Adam, beef trade. Any changes this week?
No, pretty steady, Jack. Across the water, we got some data there for the paper in terms of kill down 9%, cow kill down 7%. That's fueling again us in terms of where we're going as regards beef price. I'd say you'll see another maybe little lift. Supply's getting tight again. You know, shed cattle drying up. So you could see maybe beef edge on a little bit in the next 2 weeks. You're talking sort of top of 490 there for your heifers, 495 possibly in terms of base prices. That is, you know, 480 for bullocks, and cows probably took a little bit of a lift this week. You're talking 470, they're up from 455, 460 last week for ewe-grade cows, up to 470 this week. So all very, very positive. North also kicking on a wee bit, and across the water kicking on, they're up to 535 or 540 at the moment for all 4L heifers, which is again very, very, very positive.
Nice bit ahead of us. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah. I was talking to Phelim on the Agribusiness podcast earlier, Adam, and he was in Brazil, 420 a kilo, like over in Brazil. They must be making some killing over there.
Unbelievable. Like, and funny, in terms of when you talk about making a killing, you know, you pose a question. I was in Super Value, we'll say earlier this week, and you can still buy your two strip line steaks for that €8. That's the same price as it was, we'll say, this time last year. And then you ask the question, well, where was beef price this time last year? It was somewhere around 380 or somewhere around 480 now. Who's taking the less slice of the pie in between there? Is it factories? Is it supermarkets? And does that mean that this time last year they were really creaming it when beef was at 380? Versus where it is now at 480. Look, that's the questions. We don't have the answers to them. We should have the answers to that.
We don't, but the factory profits, you know, especially globally, would say that they are doing a right good job at the moment, like in terms of profits from some of those big the JBS and the like, you know. Anyway, more mundane matters, Adam. Dairy beef, like, you know what I mean. I get the sense like you're not happy still with this dairy beef job. Like, have you landed 10 sow calves and they won't drink? Is that it, or what's the problem?
No, not that I'm not happy. I suppose we talked in 2018 about the dairy beef index, Jack, and a lot of people talked this was going to be the savior for all, and it was going to really improve the quality of beef coming from the dairy herd. We're probably not seeing it used as well as we would like, and based on the bulls that have been used as well. Like, if I take, I've wrote about it this week on the beef page, but if I take the top three or the top five dairy beef bulls based on calving records, three of them are negative for carcass, and we're not going to change that in the short time, because there's thousands of data, but sort of thousands of calves are those top five bulls. And I suppose, where are we going in relation to getting that dairy beef index really embraced on dairy farms? I'm not too sure. Breed societies have to stand up, and in fairness to the Limousine Society, this week they launched a dairy beef breeding program where they're going to select bulls and they're going to select elite cows within the herd. There's 20,000, we'll say, pedigree limousine cows in the breeding herd in Ireland, and they've sort of set criteria on, you know, gestation length, dairy cow calving, carcass weight, and dairy beef index. They're going to select cows then to breed, we'll say elite bulls too, and try and generate some bulls then that are very suitable for the dairy herd. They see it as a market, I suppose, to go forward. And they're building in some bonuses then for breeders in terms of if your bull, we'll say, has been selected for the program and he hits the top 10% for calving traits within a couple of years, you'll get a bonus of 5,000. If he hits the top, we'll say, 10% for across all traits, you'll get a bonus of 10,000. So it's a fair, you know, bonus there for breeders to embrace and breeders to look at genetics, I suppose, and look at that dairy market as an option for. Now, I know you're going to say gestation length, I suppose, and that's an issue with limousines, but they want to try and pare down, you know, within every breed you see variation, and they want to see where they can go with gestation length.
No, look at it, and it is a piece that I suppose that's going to take a bit of time to get into. All these indices take time to kind of get a foothold in whatever sector, like, you know, so it'll be interesting to watch it as it goes along. I mean, Adam, on the ground up around you, is there a good bit happening? Like, I mean, it's been exceptionally dry, like, for the last 2 weeks now, isn't it? Like,
Actually, it's been a super week, Jack. It's been unbelievable up here. Slurry out, fertilizer going out. That's going to really help us now for silage and in terms of, you know, getting a good cut of silage, you know, an early cut of silage, a quality cut of silage. And speaking to a guy that's delivering pig slurry here locally, pig slurry is almost gone here in the local piggeries in Cavan. There's been a massive pull on it. One guy was saying he's drawn it for 20 years and he never seen such a pull on pig slurry. And, you know, that's positive as well because farmers might be looking at that as a fertilizer source as opposed to maybe paying for expensive fertilizer. But yeah, it's been a really good week. Cattle have been turned out, you know, a lot of cattle have been turned out up here and hopefully they'll get to stay out.
We were given out one time a couple of weeks ago there about the department and the soil sampling job. Did you get the results yet?
We did, would you believe? We got the results here at home this week. And I'll have to say, I'll not eat me hat, but look, they were late coming. The slurry went out here last week and we get the soil results this week. So that's not much use when you have the slurry out. But anyway, not saying that, it's a really nifty bit of kit in terms of the report that you get. You know, it shows you the colours and it colour codes the P index and the K index and the pH. Really, really easy to understand. That's the first time I've ever seen that sort of presented in that format. And you can, you know, look at it in your phone there and very, very quickly you'll assess what part of the farm needs lime, what part of the lamb farm needs slurry and what part of the farm, you know, maybe needs some P and K as regards fertilizer. So yeah, really, really impressed with it. And it'll be really useful in a lot of farms that.
Okay. And you had a good webinar on Wednesday night. Adam, let's can watch that back. Like what was the kind of summary? What was the key message?
Sure, I suppose we talked to Sean about what he's doing on Tullamore as regards maybe trying to change things around a wee bit and around grassland management as well. And I suppose paddocks, you might say very, very simple, but in terms of growing more grass and you know, keeping grass ahead of stock and keeping quality grass ahead of stock is going to be very, very important in 2022. And Sean talked a bit about managing things in paddocks. Darren talked about the schemes as well. And there were some good questions came in on the schemes as to what farmers should apply for them and what they shouldn't apply for. And obviously, Aidan had advice there for dairy farmers as well as regards what the strategy should be on those farms for the next couple of weeks. So.
Have you Red Clover gone into Tullamore Farm?
Yeah, so we're looking at, we've 10 acres earmarked there in Cluna. Some of those drier paddocks up along the right-hand side is earmarked for a Red Clover silage. We're also toying with the idea of maybe putting in some multi-species swards in advance of the open day, on the open day route at the home farm that farmers will be able to see maybe that multi-species sward there. So yeah, it's hopefully going in. I suppose it just puts a little bit of pressure on the grazing ground and Sean's a little bit apprehensive about that in terms of, yeah. You know, Red Clover is going to be a silage, a 4 or 5 cut silage system probably. So it's not going to be grazed. So it's, you know, in terms of, it's about making silage for those bulls, I suppose, and try and reduce the concentrate input into those bulls.
Makes sense. And Adam, when is the right time to sow that?
Actually, I suppose it's a reseed now, Jack, in terms of the next couple of weeks. It's a spring reseed. As far as I know now, it's a spring reseed that from what I see.
Perfect. Okay, 100%. Listen, and guys can watch that back at ifj.ie/webinars. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, to move it forward to you, I mean, this could dry weather is really suiting your guys. It's coming at a real right time for those main crop lambers, like, you know what I mean, getting lambs out early. I think I saw somewhere that is Sean in Tullamore Farms getting the lambs out after 24 hours.
Yeah, Jack, look, it has been as close to it's for as perfection as possible, but look, at the last couple of days there's been a good few niggling issues around grass tetany and some cases of mastitis, and that just came from, I suppose, the real sharp change in from daytime temperatures to nighttime temperatures, and some of that even from in age years that are maybe out 3-4 weeks now with lambs at grass, is that it just is that sort of shock to their system. And so we know from grass tetany, any of those sort of triggers that affects or hits a yo when they're under pressure brings it on, like. And I look at, I suppose, there's three things at the moment. Is this one is the real change in temperature, so that's a shock to the system. Yours are under nutritional stress because they're lactating, and then anyone that's grazing, I suppose, maybe some lush swards. Now, we haven't had the rapid growth that you would generally sort of say the grass tetany should hit with. But what we did have was we perfect conditions last back in. Fellows got swards cleaned out perfect, and the growth that is there is good. Okay. So good clean, green potassium on them. It's probably triggering us a small bit.
Okay. Interesting. I mean, I was talking to Adam there about the red clover in Tullamore Farm. Like, I mean, and he mentioned also the multi-species sward. I mean, like, there's a new scheme on that multi-species job, Darren. Like, is it 50 euros a bag for the seed? Like, I mean, that's a kind of a rebate, I call it, on the cost of the seed. Like, is there Is there many guys going to take that up, do you reckon?
Jeannie Jack, it's hard to know. If we use the barometer of how often the phone rang or emails has came in or text messages or how many questions advisors are getting, we'd say it is going to be oversubscribed. But look, any time you bring in a new scheme, you put a payment out ahead of farmers, they're going to sit up and take note and they're going to maybe look at it. And the department schemes, unfortunately, I suppose, in the last while is this, the devil in the detail has come nearly after the scheme has been launched. And now, look, at all the details are out about this scheme, but it's such a short window for farmers to make up their mind. It's closing Monday, the 4th of April, Jack. So like, you've the weekend. Yeah, exactly. So open on the 25th, closing on the 4th. Now, look, you'd say this, that there probably should be enough time, but I'd say you're probably going to get a lot of people firing in an application and making up their mind after, because it's so simple to fire in an application, they'll see. But look, to go back to your original question, 50 euros per bag. It's the 50 euros is being paid to the co-op now in this situation. So 125 euros a hectare, 30 right. kilos of seed has to be sown per hectare. So that's 12 kilos per acre. So it works out as 50 euros of a stipend that's given to the co-op.
Okay. So wait now, just so that I have that clear, how much is a bag of multi-species, that 12 kilo bag? How much a bag is it?
That's the $1 million question, Jack, because we've been looking at that this week, and some of the stuff that's been in stock for a while is somewhere 60, 70 euros. I've got quotes of 85, 90, and even a few fellas have saying that if they don't get more seed in, that it could touch on 100 euros yet that they don't, they haven't a price set for it. So, I suppose, look at the workings of this is say, Jack Kennedy wants to apply for the scheme. So you go on to agfood.ie, you put in your application that you want to apply, and if it's undersubscribed, say, you want to do just, say, 3 hectares. So you get an approval letter out into the post, you bring it to Aidan Brennan, you're buying your seed off him, you give Aidan the approval letter, he signs a form, you sign a form, and he sends it off to the department for payment. Yeah. So that, say, process is going to take a few weeks. So the merchants haven't even been, I suppose, maybe up to speed on this at the moment. Even the question marks around the availability of seed. Now, I think, look, there is multi-species sward seed available, but some of the merchants have even said to me is, they don't know what's coming or they don't know what exactly. Now, the perennial ryegrass has to be coming off the department's list that Aidan knows has covered plenty of times. I think he's covered once this year already. The white and red clover will be similar. So it's only really, I suppose, where the chicory and the plantain is going. And the other one then is timothy or something like timothy has to go into it as well.
Okay. I might ask Aidan about that when I come to him. Spring lamb, Darren, we were talking a bit about the kind of early season spring lamb quotes. There is it fair to say they're up a touch already, it's still early. It's still only the 1st of April.
That sure is, Jack. Look, at the quotes that came out last week, we mentioned last week, they were sort of unrealistic, 750 a kilo and plus 10 cents of a quality assurance. The reason for that was, Jack, they didn't want them. They'd buy them and they were paying sort of a bit above Hoggart prices last week, maybe 760, 770. But this week, there's an appetite for them in quotes. We've seen that in yesterday's paper, the two ICM plants quoting 790 plus 10. That was a jump of 40 cents. Kildare Chillin, probably less sort of anxious or less keen for them, 770 plus 10. And look, to be fair to Kildare, they're driving the trade for Hoggart's. They're up 20 cents to 720 plus 10 for Hoggart's. And we've seen that drive on. So look, at spring lambs, roughly around 8 euros a kilo. Some of the cute lads are saying, actually, they'll go more, they'll want them. It's just hard to know at the moment because Hoggart's are still going to be the mainstay of the trade. What will dictate whether spring lambs go more in the immediate week, say the 2 weeks ahead, will be how many numbers come out. If numbers come out in good enough quantity that satisfies that the retailers have, say, spring lambs to be able to put on their leaflets that are going out that they have the spring lamb or Easter lamb or whatever, they'll be quite happy and they'll continue to buy away at Hoggart's. If the Hoggart's dry up, well, then you might get more of a bite. But I, like last year, what happened was there was more bite for spring lamb 2 or 3 weeks after Easter when the haggards had dried up. So no one knows. It could be a same. It could be a similar situation.
And Darren, like to get lambs ready for Easter, like it's fair to say they were probably late December born lambs, were they, or early January born lambs to kind of be ready now for the kind of the Easter trade. Is that fair to say?
Gosh, exactly. And look at where I see it, Jack, is the ones that have lambs at the moment is the few specialist producers that are at it. And also then say pedigree fellas that'll draft off the bottom, say, rung of lambs. And look at that, Jack, is I've talked to a few pedigree lads in the last week. They're at sixes or sevens as to what do they pull off at the moment, what do they not? Because like if we think at the moment they're producing rams for sale next July, August, September, concentrate prices heading close to €400 a ton. Some people say they're going to hit €500 a ton. If you're a man that isn't producing rams selling for €500, €600, €700, €800, that you're taking €250 or €300 in September, Ginny Jack, you'll be thinking twice about getting the weighing scales out and letting them off to the factory now.
And it does look like that, you know, if you take current day feed prices, like where they are for, you know, for the key ingredients, like I was just talking to Andy about it, like as well, like, I mean, they've really shot up, like, you know what I mean? For all the good ingredients, we call it the soya beans, the wheats, the barleys, you know, they've all shot up. Like, I mean, it does look like, and I mean, already, I'd say, Aidan, some of our guys are paying over €400 a ton for a dairy nut, you know, the kind of a way, like, so it looks like, and that's before the current price rise. Like, so it does look that feed prices are going in that direction. So as you say, Darren, that's making them think twice, like, you know what I mean? But on the upside, Darren, in fairness, like, I mean, you could get a very cold and wet period of growth in March. We probably haven't got it. You know, a lot of you guys are getting away nicely now and the lambs are getting a good start and they're moving forward. They're staying going, like, and would probably stay going now given the good start that they're getting.
Oh, exactly. And look, the other side of things, Jack, is that yours haven't taken as much hardship. Like, say, we've had a good back in. And look, there was a few weeks there where weather, I suppose, turned. But realistically, apart from that couple of weeks where there was heavy rainfall or that, like, it hasn't been too bad. Like, in grass utilization for the early lambers has been okay. But look, it's still a high-cost system. But relative to this time last year, the feed that they have put in so far probably hasn't been up exponentially. It's from now on that's going to kick in. And I still have fellas, Jack, that will say that they're going to continue to pre-feed the lambs that are going to be gone in May and June. And in 50% of cases, they're dead right, because there are fellas that are highly stocked. If suckler cows and weanlings coming on, they're afraid about, say, fertilizer prices. And they're saying, look, but if they can buy a bit of meal now, get the first lambs gone at a high price, they think that there'll be less lambs available, and they could, I suppose, even, so the way some of them are looking at it is, even if they take a less of a margin on the lamb, they're safeguarding their system for the back end of the year. But any of them decisions are system specific, that it's not one rule that goes across the whole system.
Okay. 100%, Darren, 100%. Leave it at that for this week. Chat to you next week. Aidan, I mean, in terms of costs, and one of the big costs is feed prices, obviously, you have a piece there this week looking at actual silage costs and where they're going to go in the coming weeks, given what we know now on diesel prices, fertilizer prices, and, you know, how much a ton of silage is going to be worth. Like, give me a summary.
Sure, it's up about 30%, Jack, of where it was last year. So, you know, that's a big increase, like, you know, considering silage is already a big cost on farms. You know, if you look at the breakdown of costs, like, you add in your contractor and fertilizer for silage, like, it's, you know, winter feed is significant. So 30% increase, you're looking at, on a ton per dry matter basis, first cost silage is going to cost you about €200 a ton. So that's 20 cents a kilo, in other words. So it's expensive. Like, that's normally, you know, 11, 12, 13 cents, so it's a fair increase. Funny enough, your bale silage is actually more expensive, so that's down at 226 euros a ton of dry matter, or in other words, around 46 euros a bale. Now, sorry, Jack, I should say those costs include a land charge, you know, which is fair enough, like, because I think you should be putting it in. Without the land charge, that drops back to about 36 euros a bale. So their Chagas figures, they look, they've a piece of the paper in the journal this week on the costings. So their Chagas figures, the reason they're given for the, you know, why bale silage is more expensive, I suppose there's a bit more transport involved in them. There's more plastic involved in them. And those two things are expensive, you know, because the diesel is so high and contractor costs are gone so high. So not good, you'd have to say, but I suppose it shows where the value is. People have been selling silage for 30, 35 euros a bale for the last, you know, a couple of weeks maybe, or prior to that. You know, that's looking like good value now at the moment, considering what's going to cost to replace it.
No, nice one. Interesting. And there's lots more in the journal. I mean, we were speaking earlier about the forage kale, for example. Like, I have a couple of lads around here have been asking me about it. Like, I mean, do you see many guys kind of like it? As you say, it's a big change. You're taking land out of the picture for 15 months at least in this job. You want to be sure that it fits, you know, because you're not going to have grass on that next spring either. Like,
no, Jack, and I mean, a lot of dairy farmers grew kale and fodder wheat and stuff like that back in the mid-noughties, you know, and they moved away from it, and they all moved away for the simple reason that it's not easy to manage. You know, you get a bad wet autumn or a bad winter, like it costs a slobber very quickly. So, you know, it's not easy. You want dry land, you want to have the labour, you know, available to move the fence every day. You need to have bales out. It is, you know, it was considered a low-cost approach, but it is if you don't have a shed. But you know, we're dealing with a situation where we have sheds, we have facilities in the farm, only we need something to fill the silage pits with. So for me, it's only middling, you know. I mean, the Western Wolds are some sort of grass crop on the tillage land. Is for me is an awful lot better because you're increasing the area of feed available. Like if you go in there after winter barley, like that's usually harvested like the middle of early July. You can go in there then, you'll have its own by the 1st of August. You're going to get a good crop of stuff off that. You'll get, you know, three cuts potentially before the end of the year. And it's easy enough to make silage out of that. It's going to be, you know, it's not going to be high quality, but it's feed. And at the end of the day, that's what you want. So that's what I'd be saying in those situations. But like, you know, it's not very palatable. But like, you know, you can buy your way out of the problem at the moment because there is fertilizer available. You know, if you buy the fertilizer and spread it, you're going to get the yields. It's different to 2018 where just grass wouldn't grow, you know. So we have it in our control, only it's very expensive. Like for me, it's such an of all the issues, not having enough winter feed is a huge one. So I'd be kind of off the view that, look, at, I mean, even if whatever effect it has in profit, God, it's better to have cows fed anyway and to have the feed in the yard. Now, look, obviously, you need to look at the number of stock you have and all the rest around. Some farms have probably carrying too many for the number of hectares they have. That's fair enough. But the majority aren't. Like, you just need to have feed for them, you know?
Aidan, the other big news, of course, in the dairy world this week was this Lakeland job in terms of putting a peak penalty on milk. You know, now, you know, they're the largest co-op in the country. They've over 2 billion litres of milk. 55% of it, the majority, is in the north of Ireland. 45% in the Republic. Like, but it's a big change to a pricing system to come along and put a 4 cents a litre penalty across April, May and June, the peak months, like, you know, and not build a vision for how they're going to get out of it for their suppliers. Like, I mean, effectively, they're kind of, it looks locked on. It's there for 5 years at least anyway, by the sounds of things. It's a big change to the whole job.
Massive, Jack. Yeah, and it's, you know, it's very... looking at it from the farmer's point of view, from the supplier's point of view, it's very hard to know what signal they're sending, you know, because they're not telling me they don't want my milk in the summer months, but you're just going to pay less for it. And I mean, even if I calve my extra, you know, if I have extra cows and I calve them in the autumn, let's say, which it seems to be what they're signaling, you know, they want us to do, you know, you're still going to have extra milk during the peak. We've showed that last year when we were discussing Glanbia, that, like, you know, you're even autumn calving, you're still going to have extra milk produced in the, because they get an extra peak, I suppose, in February, March when they go to grass. So like, it's, you know, the signal is just isn't there. I mean, and the fund, what they're going to do with the money, you know, we're not really clear on that either. Like, so the, you know, basically they're taking the 4 cents a litre off you in April, May, June. They're giving back a bonus in January for the guys in the Republic. And but like, the amount of milk you produce in January is small, you know, for most spring calving operators. So you're not going to get the full value of that back. Are they going to build an extra plant to cater for the extra milk? You know, how much capacity have they got at the moment? How, you know, under how much pressure they are. My understanding is that, like, they're not under that much pressure. So it's all a lot of questions to be asked. It's early days yet on it, and it remains to be seen how it plays out. But it's not good if you're a Lakeland supplier and you're looking to expand, you know, production, or you're a new entrant. Like, they're not taking any new entrants for 2023, and you've no application form to get in 2024. Again, you know, are these kind of values aligned to a co-op? I'm not sure. It'll be interesting times anyway, and I'm sure there's a bit of hurling to play yet.
There is, yeah, and it marks a significant change in that whole kind of history of Lakeland, because Michael Handley has always said, listen, you send us the milk, we'll process it, we'll sell it, that's our job, you know. And of course, they're still saying, send us the milk, but what they're saying, they're going to give you a kind of a second price for that, or a two-tier price for that. So, I mean, it will be interesting just to see how it falls out over the next couple of weeks.
It seems to me that it's kind of like a first move away from the kind of co-op ethos, you know. So before, co-ops in Ireland for, you know, over 100 years have built capacity in order to suit our grass-based system. Whereas in England and France and other places like that, they haven't done that. They've been privately run businesses and they just haven't invested in it. And then as a result, then farmers go into kind of a skew way system where you're milking all year round just to satisfy the processor. It's not a road, Jack, we'd like to travel on.
No. And the road that probably the beef industry has gone down to a large extent, like in terms of, because they've no seasonality left in their product, and it makes them very uncompetitive as farmers, which is a problem. So look, we might come back to it again, Aidan. I mean, one of the pieces you're dealing with this week in the journal is the whole area around breeding. And while we're still a bit away from the start of breeding, we're still probably a month away for a lot of guys. I mean, it's time to consider it, and it's time to consider the type of a product you're going to use. You know, it's fair to say, like, I mean, you've a couple of nice pieces. There's one piece there on that IVF job. That new research, I suppose, Aidan. This is the first glimpse of those results that a lot of farmers are seeing.
Yeah, Jack. So just in a nutshell, I suppose IVF, you know, we're used to, I suppose, in human reproduction, but it's new it's not that new. I mean, it's been used for in the pedigree beef side for a long time, I suppose, and pedigree dairy side. But this is more of a commercial focus on it. So the background to it is, with increased use of sex semen, are we going to have enough elite, you know, bull calves on the ground, I suppose, is the question, to generate, you know, enough genetic gain going forward. So they've looked at, in Moor Park last year, they looked at taking getting embryos, I suppose, off of these elite cows, crossing them then in the lab with the best bulls, and generating more of these embryos, and then transplanting those embryos then into recipient cows. So that's one side of it. They've also looked then at, you know, your average cow in a herd, the one that you don't want to breed replacement heifers off, the one that would traditionally now at the moment get a beef straw or a beef bull, they're putting these elite beef embryos into those cows. So there's a benefit there for the beef side, in that they're going to get a really high value beef calf from a dairy cow, you know, that's not genetically related to the dairy cow. And on the dairy side then, that you know, for most dairy farmers now, they need to worry about the dairy side of it. You know, this is for elite cows, you'll say, there'll be a select number of herds. If this technology ever, you know, hits the ground running, you'll have elite cows that are generating up to 16 calves a year, and they're going to be transplanted into these recipient cows. So you'll have good genetic gain. You know, you're using the best bulls against the best cows. Some of them will be heifers, more than will be bulls. I'm sure you can get a sex for bulls as well in time. But I suppose the results of it were, and that was over a large number of cows, they had similar conception rates with the embryo transfer as they did with the ordinary semen, ordinary AI. But I suppose they had higher embryo losses. So they scanned the 30 days and they were pregnant, but a great proportion, around 15% of the embryos, ended up being lost at the next scan, which is a month later. Whereas I think the figure was around 5% for the AI. So look, I mean, for me, it's promising. Look, the round figures aren't, you know, I think there's less than 50% conception rate to both AI and the embryo transfer. But look, I mean, it's early days. It's the first study. They're going to learn about a sex semen. Wasn't an overnight success. But give us 5 or 6 years, Jack. I'm sure we could be doing a lot more of it. And it's simple enough, you know, make it as simple as possible. Get the cows synchronized, give them the embryos, and kind of away you go. Like, so, there could be a business in this. And Adam was talking, giving out about DBI there later on, but DBI could potentially be redundant maybe I'm too optimistic, but like, you know, these are the kind of solutions that we need to be looking at. And I suppose it's good to see the trial results out.
You mentioned a sex semen, Aidan. Do you see a lot more guys using sex semen this spring, do you reckon?
Actually, they will, because the bulls are now available. Like, because of that lab set up in Moor Park now, there's way more selection available for sexed, and a lot more farmers are talking about it. Look, the one thing I'd say, Jack, and like, you'll only use sex semen if you're trying to reduce the number of heifer or number of cows in calf, you know, carrying a heifer, carrying a dairy bred animal. Because look, the value of dairy stock at the moment is poor. Countless number of farmers aren't to be selling, you know, maiden heifers or dairy calves. Nobody actually wants them at the moment, which is funny, you know, considering where milk price is, but just people don't want to carry extra stock. There's probably a surplus of dairy stock in the country at the minute, and the price is poor. So really, it's for more beef bulls is the reason you'd use sex semen. Definitely, and look, it does reduce your conception rate a bit, so you need to be very careful about using it. Lots of farmers are on to me that they used it in 2020 and got on great with it. They used it, you know, got way more confident last season and used a lot more of it. Use cows, you know, maybe iffy ones, they may or may not should have got the sex semen. And a lot of them are reporting that they were much quieter this February than they should have been, just because, you know, the cows held for, they didn't go and calf the first time. So you do need to be careful with it, that you're using it in the cows that have the best chance of holding.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Aidan, Adam and Darren. Remember, you can watch back any of the recent Tullamore Farm webinars that are broadcast on a Wednesday night on ifj.ie/webinars. Next Wednesday, Darren has a lambing live shoot from Tullamore Farm. So that'll be very interesting. So tune into that if that's what you're into. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.